Anyone trying to play Fortnite with your boy?
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster, and you can find me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Bball. Of course, we've had the news of the Kawhi Leonard trade going to Toronto that scuttled some of the plans that myself and my guest were going to have on yesterday's show. So instead, we've pushed it into today's show, which is a day later than what it normally would have been, but it doesn't really matter because all this stuff is still relevant. So let's bring back my Basketball Monster colleague, Kyle McEwen.
I love you guys, except for you, Kyle.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate you having me on again.
Yes, as most people will be aware, we recorded this straight after the one about Kawhi Leonard, but we're airing it a day later, so you guys are getting a double dose of Kyle. And we want to talk about, I've spoken about over the last couple of days with some analytics guys, some scouting guys, with Jacob Goldstein, Jackson Hoy, about Summer League action. Now I'm going to talk to Kyle about his thoughts on Summer League and how it can apply to a fantasy perspective as well. Kyle, I'm going to start with your favorite prospect in the NBA draft, and of course that is Trae Young.
Dude's a bum. Look, the older I get, and I express, we have a Slack chat for work, right?
Yep.
And if Russia was ever to hack into that, I would feel bad because I say a lot of mean shit to my coworkers about players that I don't want to put on Twitter because, like, I'm 35. I don't want to talk crap about some 18-year-old kid, you know, out in public when in reality it's just. I'm just trying to have fun talking to my friends, you know, but I did just, I've been questioning the Trae Young hype since the day it came out. And go back and look at our Slack chats. Like, as soon as this Trae Young hype was building up and everybody's like, oh my God, he's the next Seth Curry or Steph Curry. I waited a couple weeks and then I went and I watched some of his highlights. And I remember going into the Slack and being like, you guys, is this legit? Like, is this real? Because I'm just not seeing it. And then for the Luka Doncic thing to happen, that put a greater spotlight on Trae Young for him to be the focal point for the Hawks in the draft, to the point that they passed up taking Jaren Jackson Jr. They passed up taking Luka Doncic, who I think are just can't miss guys. The fact that they passed up or did not evaluate correctly what Wendell Carter Jr. is now showing us. And you know, obviously you don't want to overreact to anything in Summer League, whether that's how poorly Trae Young played or how well Wendell Carter Jr. played. But Wendell Carter Jr. was legit, and it's going to be fun watching him play this year. And Wendell Carter Jr. was so legit that, I mean, the baseline for him this year is splitting minutes with Robin Lopez. And the upside for Wendell Carter Jr. is 30 to 32 minutes as the starter at some point this season. And that's just awesome, considering the fact that he's shown that in addition to his amazing blocks numbers he was putting up and just the way he went after those blocks in the Summer League, his want, he also showed a quick-footedness or a fleet-of-footness to be able to get out on the perimeter and do adequately if he has to go and switch in a defensive scheme this year. So, you know, whereas you look at that Bulls roster and you've got Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker and Lauri Markkanen, who are all kind of question marks on defense in regards to the impact that they can offer at three positions, Wendell Carter Jr. is going to step in and be, though he's probably not going to be as consistent or as reliable as a Robin Lopez has become, he's also going to offer a higher ceiling in regards to the exciting plays that he can make because of his athleticism and his quicker feet than what Robin has. So just tremendous excitement in regards to some things. Sorry, Josh. Do you want to maybe focus me with a question about Trae Young?
No,
because otherwise, I'm just going to keep rambling about the summer league.
Okay, let's talk Trae Young here just quickly. He showed some passing skills. I know you're not quite as high on his passing ability. The shot selection was poor. The field goal percentage was poor. Do you think he's going to be a draftable player for this coming season?
I think that's yet to be seen. In general, yes, because Dennis Schroeder is going to get traded, most likely. Although a lot of the times that we get really certain about stuff, and then we quickly get shown the door on such certainty because nothing will happen, or the market just won't be there. So then a team will get stuck saying, "Well, you know what? We got Schroeder. He's going to continue to start, or we're going to bring him off the bench in some kind of weird role, or we're going to have to pair those two guys together just to make a square peg fit into a round hole, because that's what our roster is right now." And considering what the Hawks are, in that they are still very much a project team, the Process 2.0 with Lloyd Pierce being there as the head coach now, formerly of the Sixers staff, it's I don't know. I guess I wouldn't be surprised if we end up seeing a Jeremy Lin and Dennis Schroeder starting backcourt to begin the season, with Trae Young coming off the bench until they can get rid of Schroeder. But at some point, you know Trae Young's going to start this year unless he's just that bad. So there's a lot of ways that I think it could go. Trae Young has the ability to hit some really deep shots, but he's also shown an inability to choose his shots well, and his shot selection at Summer League. You know, Dawkins put out it, look, it's a little bit, I didn't watch every single Summer League game, so a lot of my takes are coming from extrapolating on the highlight reels that we have on YouTube available to us. But a lot of the Trae Young videos out there were these full play videos where you got to see all the mistakes that Trae Young was making in Summer League, and you didn't necessarily see those same mistakes on other highlight videos for other players. So in some respects, maybe I am looking at Trae Young through too much of a kaleidoscope of hate, but in other respects, some of the mistakes that Trae Young made, or some of the positions that he put himself in, and the way the ball would just fall out of his hand, or when you watch him dribble and how almost rudimentary his handle is in comparison to other NBA point guards, or the fact that he would often look at his dribbling hand to make sure the ball was still there, I'm just like, whoa, what is going on? That's weird. That's not something you often see, where an NBA player is looking at his hand to try to make sure that the ball's coming with it. There were instances where, yes, he hit these amazing shots, or he hit 7 3-pointers in a game, and you're like, yeah, but he was also 7 of 21 from the field, and so overall, it's just not that good. Or if you're examining and breaking down Trae Young's game, and you watch the way he goes to the rack, out of all 30 first round picks, he had the worst percentage at the rim out of all the other first round picks from this year. He also shoots at the rim with a lot of these underhand layups, which is just, I have no confidence in that, because if you're putting up these underhand like floater layups as you're going to the rim, you're going to get your shot's going to get beat a lot. I also look at his vision, and everybody wants to speak to the fact that, oh, he led the NCAA in assists as well as leading in scoring per game. Yeah, go look at the rest of that OU roster. It wasn't good, or nobody else was shooting the ball, so he had the ball in his hands all the time to generate those assists, and he also led in turnovers as well. So there's just a lot of people who have the narrative that Trae Young is going to succeed in the NBA and that his long-range shooting is going to carry him, and I don't see it. I see somebody who's been given a propensity of opportunity, and I will give him all the credit in the world, and I am happy as all get out, genuinely, that anybody would be able to take advantage of the opportunity that they had in order to position themselves to make life-changing money for his family and for himself. And if there's one thing that he can do to really change the narrative around a little bit of hope for him, jokingly, is to cut his hair. I want it shaved.
Go full bald. Yep.
Go full bald, buddy. Okay? Because right now you look like you're 22, even though you have a smile of an 18-year-old. So, yeah, you know what? I don't have faith that he's going to pan out in the NBA, and I wouldn't be surprised if he who was Joel? Who was the guy who, like, the Bucks took all those years ago? It was like 6'8" wing player.
Joe Alexander.
Thank you. Yeah, he didn't get his option picked up in, like, year three or whatever it was. Yeah, so I see that being the Trae Young path. He got fed up with all this Steph Curry hope that Travis Clank had for building Golden State 2.0, and they just made a really terrible decision in regards to drafting Trae Young with the 5th pick and trading the opportunity to draft somebody else with the 3rd pick.
I'm not as down on Young as what you are, obviously. I still think he's got some significant bust potential. I hated the move that they made at the draft. But let's talk about another guy here, Kyle. Someone sent me, and I asked this a while ago, to send me their dynasty rookie drafts and where guys were being picked. And someone just sent me one today, and they said at number one, it was Luka Doncic. Yep, makes sense. Number two was Jaren Jackson Jr. Makes sense. Number three, Kevin Knox. And that feels like nonsense to me. The rest of these guys' top five is Wendell Carter Jr. and then Mo Bamba. So, I'll play this one for you.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So DeAndre Ayton falls out the top five, but that was Kevin Knox at pick 3. He sounds ridiculous to me. I've given my thoughts on him and what his fantasy overall value can be. He showed me more than I expected in Summer League, but what did you take away from Kevin Knox's performances?
Your guests on the last couple of shows, you guys kind of talked about Kevin Knox quite a bit, and you spoke in detail about the fact that at Kentucky, he was mostly a spot-up shooter.
Yep.
Whereas at Summer League, we got to see Knox get the ball put in his hands. He was able to try to do things off the dribble. But again, if you were watching the whole game, you saw a lot of mistakes happen, or his handle come loose a lot of times. We saw some great things from him. I think what you see out of Kevin Knox is a natural ability, a natural stroke to shoot the ball well, potentially. He needs to become consistent there. But again, he's still just 18, isn't he? So
yeah, he is.
There is tons of room for growth, and you love all of the root abilities or talent that is there for him. He had some tremendous dunks. He really did look like a less polished version of Jason Tatum in certain respects, just because of his body and his length and his athleticism. So You love what's possible there. It's exciting to hear. Who's the new coach for the
Fizdale?
Help me out, David Fizdale with the Knicks. The way that he talked about Kevin Knox, it gives you hope for Knox's fantasy potential this year. Also, the way that Fizdale has talked about how he plans to run his rotation, or where he plans to play certain players, the fact that he doesn't want to use Courtney Lee or Tim Hardaway Jr. as an undersized small forward anymore. You look at that and you go, okay, with Porzingis being out until at least late, mid-December, probably a little bit longer than that, there's opportunity for Hezonja and Kevin Knox to step into a lot of minutes early in the season. And if they flourish, if they can be put in a position to be more efficient and to help the Knicks feel like their development is more important than maybe securing a potential playoff spot this year, then yeah, you love a lot about what Kevin Knox can offer. But considering how much more polished some of the other players have already looked, whether that's, in my opinion, Ayton or Wendell Carter Jr., I don't know. I definitely wouldn't have been taking Knox number 3 overall. But you know what? In some respects, if you don't, if you're not a believer in Ayton, if you are, because there's some haters out there, if you just don't trust that the Summer League was truly indicative of what Wendell Carter Jr. is going to be, then I can understand the argument of Kevin Knox becoming a dynasty number three overall pick in a, especially if you're a New York Knicks fan or something like that, and you're just like, I can't pass up on this possibility to have him on my roster.
Well, speaking of the New York Knicks, Mitchell Robinson was another player that caught everybody's eye. I think that he's got a legitimate chance to start at least some games this season. I think he's probably got top 50 upside, not this year, but at some point in the next 3 to 4 years. He looked great. He looked active offensively, defensively. He showed a ton to me. Were you as impressed with Mitchell Robinson as what most people were?
He looked keyed in and completely unintimidated. And this is from someone who didn't play basketball last year.
Yeah.
So now... and he just fired his agent because his agent kept him out of the combine, which if Mitchell Robinson would have went to the combine showing what he showed at Summer League, he probably would have been a flipping lottery pick, if not in the top 20.
That's not crazy at all. Yeah, I think almost definitely a top 20 guy, like ahead of guys like, yeah, Dante DiVincenzo or Kevin Huerta. I could see him going ahead. And that's why, you know, when we talked about the NBA draft and I was like, I'm not sure why you want to be spending, you know, 4 or 5 top 7 picks on centers when so many of these good centers come in that second round area, like Rudy Gobert, like Clint Capella. And I get the feeling that Robinson's going to be another one of those guys that you can get later on, who's able to do exactly what you need from a modern center. And I think that's what's going to happen here with the Knicks. He's going to develop into one of those guys. Now, some of these centers picked early, like Carter, like Jackson, like Ayton, they could all be really, really strong players. But you know, when you can still get a guy who can provide a decent amount of value later on, I think that's probably a really strong value proposition that you should be looking at. And he was unbelievably impressive. I think that Enes Kanter is going to be the starter for this team at center, but beyond him, are they going to reinvigorate Joakim Noah? Are they going to be playing Luke Kornet there ahead of Mitchell Robinson? I think he's got a chance to have a pretty significant role as early as this season.
I think if, you know, it's funny. It's with if Porzingis was healthy, you could justify playing Kanter as the starter more because then you've got Porzingis to help protect the rim with his shot blocking ability. But with Porzingis out, you almost... It's tough. I wonder which way Fizdale's going to go because you can look at Kanter and you can say, all right, with Ntilikina and Hardaway and then Knox and Hezonja and the unknowns, so the question marks around Knox and Hezonja, if they're going to be the starters at the two forward spots, you want Kanter in there to be someone who you can throw the ball to go get a bucket and somebody who's going to be able to really pull down those boards for you defensively because the other guys are question marks there. But Mitchell Robinson his defense is, it's unquestioned. He was blocking, I believe he blocked more jump shots than the entirety of the rest of the Summer League, like all 30, you know, all 29 teams. So yeah. Just bananas, right? And if you actually watch his highlights. You know, you don't have to go back and watch all the games. Just watch his highlights, and you can see he's locked in. He's not intimidated. He's not getting lost on defense. He's not getting lost in his coverages. And he was working the boards well, too. Working the offensive boards on misses, which there was plenty of because it's Summer League. And as is obvious if you look at Kevin Knox's shooting percentages. But... yeah, Mitchell Robinson. He should be on everybody's mind. You know, like I think I've got the 14th pick in the one dynasty league that I'm in with you, and I'm sitting there and I'm going, man, it'd be really great if Mitchell Robinson drops to me at 14. But I think we've got enough keyed in people in those leagues that there's no way in hell he drops to me at 14, which is saying something to jump from second round up to a quote unquote lottery level pick. For fantasy production, I think that's probably where he lies.
Yeah, I think he's almost guaranteed a top 20 guy in those dynasty formats. I'm going to be re-ranking my dynasty rookie value guys in the coming days and have a show on that next week, but he's going to jump up significantly. Now, the guy that was pick number one, Kyle, was, of course, DeAndre Ayton, who averaged 14 and 10, a steal and a block, had zero assists and 13 turnovers in his time at Summer League. Was really efficient, but I don't know. You don't seem to be as down on Ayton as... Well, not that people were down on him, but you seem to have seen quite a bit of positivity from DeAndre. I think he's going to be good. I'm not sure he's going to be better than Jackson or Carter at this early stage.
So Kokoschkov, the new head coach with the Suns, said that they did a poor job. The team as a whole did a poor job. The coaches as a whole did a poor job of... making Aiden a bigger part of the offense. And one of the narratives about Summer League is the idea that it's a, for one thing, these guys have never played together. Yep. You know, you come in, you have one to three practices together, and then you go out and you play a couple games, and these are guys fighting for contracts. It's about you. So you've got a lot of guard play. You've got the guards who aren't necessarily passing the ball or moving it around a lot, because once you get the ball, you better shoot the damn thing up so that you can prove that you can shoot the ball and that you are competent in doing so. So with Ayton, he was asked to come in, and since they drafted Ayton, Kokoschkov just talked. All he's really talked about with Ayton is his defense and how much he's going to be good at defense. He's going to be the anchor of their defense. He's going to play center. He's not going to be playing power forward. One of the things that, you know, I've never really bought into the idea that Ayton's bad at defense. One of the things I watched from him in college, and I know that, Josh, you make the point or have made the point before about, well, Jaren Jackson Jr.'s block rate was up a lot better than Ayton's, and Jaren Jackson Jr. was playing plenty at power forward. Look, Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be historically great defender for the NBA, and especially for the way that the NBA is going. But I still think that Ayton's going to be a very good defender, and the fact that he spent almost all of his time at power forward playing for Arizona, that gave him so much experience being able to guard out on the perimeter, being able to be a better switch defender, or at least have some more experience getting in those positions. Guarding on the perimeter, you know, there is a like 4-minute video of every single block from Ayton at Arizona last year on YouTube. And I don't remember one block in that 4-minute video where he was actually standing in the paint waiting for someone to come in. Almost every single block, and I mean like 95% of them, were him guarding someone out on the perimeter who's smaller than him, and then him tracking, moving his feet well, keeping that offensive player in front of him, and then him swatting the heck out of the shot on the move. And that seems important to me. You look more and more at an NBA that's going to be five out, and you're thinking, okay, we're not going to have people banging in the post. You're going to have guys cutting all the time and moving, and then the ball getting kicked out to the corners. So you're going to want somebody who can guard out on the perimeter efficiently or well enough, and then be able to move their feet well enough to stay with somebody who's attacking the rim and then potentially make a block at the rim. So it's just going to, I look at Ayton and I see positivity, or I see a flower that is, just needs a little bit more sunlight, which is apropos considering where he plays. I'm very much looking forward to Ayton playing exclusively at center this year. I think he's going to get tons of minutes, which is important. And even if his blocks aren't where people want them to be, I thought he was trying hard. And the things that he talked about when he was interviewed during the summer league was a lot of things about, you know, Kokoschkov wants me to be Kevin Garnett. He wants me talking. He wants me orchestrating the defense. And the fact that Ayton knows that, or is at least saying the right things about that, that gives me hope too, in regards to that, him having the proper mental mindset to do what needs to be done. Because when you look at that Suns team, that's what they need. They need a rim protector. So it makes sense that Kokoschkov would go to him and say, hey, look, this is what you need to focus on. We've got Devin Booker on the team. Your scoring's going to come. We all know that Ayton can be a good jump shooter. He's got a nice stroke. And what you didn't see at Summer League was, for one thing, he would roll to the rim. The ball didn't really find him that much. He was getting a lot of his offense on putbacks because he rebounds really well. And he goes after rebounds. Okay. He doesn't just let them come to him. He's going and he's getting them. Which is, sounds like a simple thing, but if you watch, you can be like, oh, he's got effort. There was, when they were playing the Kings, and he was getting matched up with Harry Giles on certain possessions, he would either box out Giles from the front, or even if Giles had position on him, Ayton was making an effort to jump up and then tip the ball out to himself so that he could get the rebound over Giles without getting an over-the-back call. And I just saw a lot of things that gave me a lot of hope and high expectations for him this season. And if Kokoschkov was legitimate in what he said about the fact that they didn't run enough plays for Ayton, if you go with the narrative of the guard play just not allowing big men to get the ball a lot on offense in the summer league, then you can see an opportunity with the Suns with a guy who, like Devin Booker, who's a driver. You know, he takes plenty of three-point shots, and he's known as a shooter, but Devin Booker's a driver, and he goes hard to the rack. There's going to be opportunities, same for Josh Jackson, for Ayton to pop out or to get those offensive rebounds and get plenty of rebounds to go with putbacks. So I've got a lot of hope for Ayton, and at least with what he did do on offense at Summer League this year, it was very efficient.
Yeah, extraordinarily efficient, 60% from the field, 82% from the free throw line. I think that the lack of assists, steals, blocks is going to keep him from being an upper echelon top 20 type fantasy guy, but he can easily be a top 50, top 60, top 70 guy in that sort of range. As I've said many times, and Nikola Pekovic was a guy who was able to rebound highly, score well, and be really efficient, and Ayton's going to be a better offensive player than that, just that those lack of defensive numbers, or even like an Enes Kanter type of guy. We know that Enes Kanter's been put up top 40 numbers when given a large role, and Ayton could very easily do that. It's just getting to that next level, getting to that level where I think Jackson or Carter could go to because of their ability to get steals and blocks and do those other things as well. That sort of limits what his upside is there. But yeah, it's far from all doom and gloom from Ayton, but a lot of the things that we were concerned about in terms of his overall game and statistical profile, they did sort of show out there in Summer League as well. Grayson Allen, Kyle, was a guy that showed me more than I anticipated. I think it's going to be hard for him to find this sort of a role during the regular season with all the playmakers that Utah has, but he showed me way more than I anticipated. He handled the ball well, contributed defensively, and I think he's an NBA rotation player almost straight away, and probably is ahead of someone like Alec Burks on that Utah team.
Yeah, I would definitely think he's ahead of Alec Burks, just because you already know that Grayson Allen's going to put it out there on defense. His passing ability looked great at Summer League. The way that he would attack into the paint and then just pump an assist from his hips out to the corners. He looked really good. You know, what is he, 6'4", 6'5"? He's got good enough size. He's strong for his size. You know, Dick Grayson Allen, the original Robin Nightwing. I didn't give him a lot of credence for whatever reason, because I was kind of, he was such a dick in college with how he was tripping people and stuff. And it was hard for me to overlook that. I thought he had, just a bad mentality about how to be a competitor. Like, oh, you can't defend, or you, when you get beat, you get so your ego gets hurt so bad that you're going to trip the defender or the offensive player. Like, what is that? That's ridiculous. But it seems like you got to make some excuses or give some leeway to the fact that these are young kids who are going to grow a lot from year to year potentially. And he just looks really good. If the Jazz decide to get rid of Ricky Rubio at some point, or if Dante Exum doesn't pan out the way they want, there's definitely going to be room for Grayson Allen to step in next to Donovan Mitchell and be two kind of strong 6'4", 6'5 dudes who just go out there and do a little bit of everything. You know, they're just like, both of those guys are like, I don't want to say that. I was going to say shorter versions of Joe Ingles, but I don't really like comparing Donovan Mitchell's game to Joe Ingles' game. I'm a lot more, hyped up about what Grayson Allen could be in the NBA in regards to just being a solid rotation player, with upside to someday be a, you know, a starter at point guard next to another player who's the primary facilitator or shooting guard. So a lot more positive about him than I was coming into Summer League.
Yeah, exactly the same on Allen. He showed me way more than I anticipated. Let's change pace a little bit now, Kyle. Let's move to some free agency moves that happened. New Orleans, an interesting team. Obviously, DeMarcus Cousins left. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the players that arrived in New Orleans, with Elfrid Payton coming in and Julius Randle coming in. I would assume at this point Payton is going to be the starting point guard with Drew Holiday and Etuan Moore alongside him, and then Julius Randle, Anthony Davis in the front court, and Nikola Mirotic coming off the bench. Did you like the moves, and did you think that getting Payton and Randle is potentially an upgrade for this team over DeMarcus Cousins, which is definitely an upgrade over what they had at the end of last season when Cousins was out. But are you impressed with these moves that the Pelicans made?
I think, you know, losing DeMarcus Cousins sucks, but DeMarcus Cousins isn't DeMarcus Cousins right now because he's coming back from that Achilles injury and he's not going to be able to play, or at least if he did, you know, if DeMarcus Cousins were to come back early in the season, if he had signed with another team that actually wanted him to play early in the season and wasn't going to give him the time to sit and rest and get completely healthy in his recovery, you would have seen a decline from DeMarcus Cousins in regard to what he once was to what he will be. So yeah, losing DeMarcus Cousins sucks, but I think getting Julius Randle at $9 million a year, like they did on a 2-year deal, it was tremendous. I have a lot of respect for the game that Randle does have. And, you know, regardless of the things that may be missing from his game, if Anthony Davis is, look, Anthony Davis is such a great rim protector, shot blocker, defensive player that Julius Randle fits really, really nicely next to him.
Yeah, I think it's a great combination.
And Julius Randle has been playing power forward most of his time with the Lakers. So even though he did serve as a small ball power forward in the second unit as well a lot. So there's, whether or not you think he's good at doing it, Julius Randle is somebody who has defended on the perimeter a lot in his career already. So you've got guys who can switch. And you know that whether or not you think he's good, same for Nikola Mirotic. He's defended on the perimeter most of his career. And if you're going with these switching schemes on defense, all of these guys at least have done it, whether or not they've done it at a high level or not. And with Anthony Davis there to be the defensive anchor, you like the fact that Julius Randle provides another ball handler. He provides somebody who's going to attack the rack and help open up the perimeter for Anthony Davis to potentially get even more wide open shots, or for Mirotić to get more wide open shots. I think it's interesting. I don't really know how the minutes are going to play out well, whether or not Anthony Davis is going to commit to being the starting center full-time or how it's all going to roll. I do think the fit of Randle with Nikola Mirotić on the squad is a little bit awkward because while I would like to put forth the idea that it is possible to play the three of those guys together, we didn't see Alvin Gentry throw any of his power forward players into small forward spots last year, whether that was Mirotić or Anthony Davis. And with Elfrid Payton, that I honestly think him cutting his hair is going to be, people want to make, you know, like, look, dude, it got in the way of a shot. It did. I think it maybe cut down on his vision a little bit. I think it matters, and I'm interested to see how much it may matter, but also the fact that he is, I think he had a bit of a, what's the polite way to put this? I think he had his ego checked a little bit this offseason with the fact that the Suns didn't want him back after only having him for a couple months. And the only place that he could go really was back home to New Orleans. So I think it's interesting. The Pelicans definitely appear to be set on having Payton start next to Drew Holiday. And they said that they like what Payton offers, that they've been and they've admired his game for several years. And they think that with the game that Anthony Davis has, that Payton fits in well with Anthony Davis and is somebody who he can grow with. So yeah, I think there's a lot to be intrigued by there. And knowing that Rajon Rondo put up some decent stats whenever he was actually getting the minutes with the Pelicans, it leads you to believe that Elfrid Payton is somebody who could have a resurgence this year or find his way into more consistent relevancy.
Yeah, I think it's a possibility that he's going to be one of those guys I look to target outside the top 100 in drafts. He's got that ability to step forward. I do like Frank Jackson there as well, who showed quite a bit in that one and only Summer League game he played before hurting his ankle. He'll be fine for the season, though. Payton's going to get that opportunity. He can get assists. He can rebound well. He's just got to get a few other things going to be a guy, but maybe he can be a top 70 player, and you're not going to need to take him anywhere near that sort of a zone. So I think that a bounce back is possible. possible for him. Julius Randle, he was a top 90 player in under 27 minutes per game, and over the last 2 months of the year, he was a top 50 guy when he was getting 32 minutes per night. So expecting him to be a top 50 guy, I don't think that's an unrealistic expectation. He only had a 25% usage rate for the Lakers, so it's not like he's going to have to come across here to the Pelicans and take this significant cut to the amount of touches he was getting. Cousins was rocking a 30% usage rate. Randle can step in. He's not going to get that level, but he can very easily replicate the 25% usage he had. Etuan Moore's not demanding the ball a ton. Elfrid Payton isn't. It's going to be Drew. It's going to be Randle. It's going to be Davis. And it's going to be Mirotić. They're the four guys who are going to really, you know, have the ball in their hands and taking control of the ball. I think he's going to have more of an opportunity in New Orleans to get assists, much similar to what he was doing in 16-17 with the Lakers. That reduced last year when Lonzo Ball was on board. He didn't get as many assists, but I think that will possibly jump back up with New Orleans. I think he's got a real chance to be a top 50 guy. I wasn't a massive Julius Randle fan. I was really impressed with what he did last season, and I think it's a great fit for him in New Orleans. So I do like that move from the Pelicans to get him over there.
Randle's still just, I believe, 22, right? Like, he's still...
He's 23.
Okay. Well, he's still, you know, essentially stepping into his prime years. And last thought on those guys is they've both been on terrible teams. You know, Kobe was at the bottom of his career with Randle there. So going to a team that's going to be competitive every single night with a player that demands the defensive attention that Anthony Davis does, that can help those guys maybe blossom a little bit more as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how these guys go, but I'm pretty excited about that opportunity. Now, Kyle, another guy who changed teams, Tyreek Evans, went from Memphis to Indiana. He probably slides in as the backup 1, 2, and 3 behind Victor Oladipo, behind Bojan Bogdanovic, behind Darren Collison, and should be getting, I would imagine, close to 30 minutes per night on his 1 year, $12 million deal. We know how good he was last year before injury and bullshit shut him down at the end of the season. Do you think that he can put up numbers similar to what he did in Memphis, or you just don't think that he's going to have quite as large a role and playing time as what he did for the Grizzlies last season?
They still got Corey Joseph on the squad this year?
Yep.
Okay, so I think Darren Collison, Corey Joseph, both get a little bit mitigated or dialed back a little bit. Oladipo's still going to get, you know, 34 to 36 minutes every night. But Doug McDermott, Bojan Bogdanovic, those are guys who are going to fill somewhat of a consistent role, I would expect. But they could also have their minutes dialed back a little bit. It'll be interesting to see exactly how Tyreek Evans fits in, because there could be nights where he only plays 23 minutes, but there could be a lot of nights where I would say most nights he's going to be pushing for 30 minutes. Because he's... Everybody I just mentioned, he's, you know what, he's going to be the second or third best player on this team, arguably. So you're not going to... Nate McMillan is going to play his best players. We might even see us... I don't think that they're going to start Tyreek Evans, just because with the size deficiency in Darren Collison and Corey Joseph, you're going to want a little bit more size off the bench. You're also not going to want to waste... Probably you're not going to want to put Corey Joseph and Darren Collison together coming off the bench either. So, and you want to, the Pacers exceeded so many expectations last year and were such a consistent team with the group that they had. The fact that they brought all those guys back, in addition to adding pieces like Tyreek and Kyle O'Quinn, I think that you're going to see some of the guys that had bigger roles last year get dialed back a little bit. Tyreek will have a probably 26 to 30 minute role every single night, with some nights where he's, you know, he may not play the first 3 minutes of the game, but he plays the rest of them. He's going to fit in well there, and he's going to be able to get stats and be another attacker along with Oladipo.
Yeah, he's going to have some significant opportunities, clearly. This season, really going to be excited to see what he can do. He was really massive last season for the Grizzlies and was a key portion to many fantasy teams. We were able to get him off the wire or with the last pick in drafts. Now, Kyle, your hometown Milwaukee Bucks, they signed Brook Lopez. to come in and ostensibly be the starting center. I'm pretty big on what Lopez can do for this coming season. We saw that when he got the minutes pushed back to 30 at the end of the season for the Lakers, that pretty much his numbers were very, very similar to what he'd been doing in Brooklyn. He saw a astonishing drop in his free throw percentage, mainly, and I don't have any scientific basis for this, but I see so many guys in bad situations have their free throw percentage drop by about 10 percentage points, and that he was not happy, and that impacted his free throws. The same thing happened to Oladipo the year before in Oklahoma City. Things weren't going well for him. His free throw percentage dropped, and I think that Lopez can bounce back up. He's going to get the bulk of those minutes over Thon McCur and the Muppet John Henson, and should be getting 28 to 29, I would imagine. I could very easily see Henson being out of the rotation completely, or McCur, one of those guys. Tyler Zeller's already gone. I'm pretty big on Lopez having a bounce back, and maybe he doesn't get back to a top 40 type of guy, but I think top 50 is within range without it being necessarily the most likely probability.
Unless Lopez, for some reason, has regression, which I don't really see that happening, especially after he had a year of rest almost last year, playing limited minutes almost every night. I would expect him to play no less than 25, maybe in a weird situation where Budenholzer's just committing to using different lineups, or he likes what Thonmaker offers. They do limit Lopez a little bit more than what I would expect, but in general, I'm anticipating him playing 26 to 31 minutes next year, and more towards the high end of that. Like you were saying, it's probably going to be closer to 28 to 30 or something like that. Brooke Lopez makes the Bucks a legitimate title contender next year, and that's not, oh, Kyle likes Giannis way too much kind of crap. No, that's if you look at matchups, you look at what the Bucks did last year, taking the Celtics to 7 games, who then took LeBron to 7 games. It's the growth of that team and of Giannis and the guys around him, how good Chris Middleton is, the fact that Brogdon's going to be healthy. Yes, Eric Bledsoe is an awkward fit on offense there, but guess what? Budenholzer is going to iron out a lot of those wrinkles. What the Bucks needed was a starting center who could protect the rim, but not hang out in the damn post all the time, or even milling around the free throw line, which mucks up the possibility or the opportunities for Giannis to attack the rim and other players like Eric Bledsoe to attack the rim. So now that you got Brooke Lopez hanging out on the perimeter, that's going to suck out that defensive center from the other team, and it's going to make those guys' jobs easier too. So he's the perfect fit for what they needed. People that are worried that Brooke Lopez is a lumbering center, well, you know what? He's not going to be, who cares if he's lumbering around the paint on defense? That's what he's going to be there to do. And who cares if, it doesn't matter if he's lumbering out at the 3-point line, because if it's sucking out a great defensive center like Andre Drummond or somebody else, then you've got all this room in the paint to just destroy with Giannis and Eric Bledsoe and Malcolm Brogdon. And I don't think they have really anybody else who attacks a lot. But with Brooke Lopez starting at center, if Thonmaker or Maker takes any jumps in his game, in his ability to knock down shots, Maker's always been looked at as somebody who should be able to switch, who should be fleet of foot enough to essentially play defensively almost any position. So you're going to be able to throw out lineups with Chris Middleton, Giannis, Maker, Brooke Lopez, and then any guard that you want at point guard or whatever. Or maybe you throw out Tony Snell. Maybe you throw out Sterling Brown, and you're just using Middleton and Maker, or Middleton and Giannis, as your primary ball handlers with this just 6-7 and up, lineup that's insane. And it'll be awesome to see if Budenholzer's doing that stuff. I'm really interested to see if Budenholzer asks Giannis to dial back his offensive contributions and to pump up the defensive contributions, just because that's what the team might need more than some other things. Are we going to see more of the 60 win Atlanta Hawks type offense where it gets spread out, or is Budenholzer going to say, yeah, you know what? I didn't really have a go-to scorer on that Hawks team, so we shared the ball around, but with Giannis, you're just going to unleash the beast there and let other teams get destroyed. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah,
I do think they're dumb as hell to let Jabari go, though.
Jabari Parker in Mr. No Defense now with Chicago, but he clearly didn't want to be there with that team. Didn't like the way things were being handled, and he is out. There's definitely a lot of interest with this Bucks team, and I agree they should be pushing for a top four seed in the East, along with Philadelphia, Boston, and Toronto. The Pacers will have a thought about getting into that mix as well, with Cleveland. Cleveland dropping out of that mix almost guaranteed. Let's go on to the last portion of the show today. A few other just notes and things that you've noticed and wanted to talk about, Kyle. The first one of those is the Hornets rotation with their centers. Now that Dwight Howard is gone, we've got Cody Zeller, we've got Bismack Biyombo, we've got Billy Hernangómez in that mix. Hernangómez showed a great propensity to hit his threes in summer league. We know that on a per minute basis, he's fantastic, and Cody Zeller is not fantastic on a per minute basis, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's how those minutes are going to play out in the regular season. Biyombo there throws a little bit of an extra wrinkle into things with this team. Is there someone there who's going to really step forward and get the bulk of those minutes? How do you see those centers playing out for the Hornets?
I don't see Biyombo being in the rotation most nights. Cody Zeller might get shafted unless he develops his 3-point shot dramatically over the offseason. And Willie Hernangómez, his 3-point shot looked really good as far as the mechanics of it at Summer League. And he's just a good, smart player. So I have a lot of admiration for what Willie Hernangómez could become next year, and I don't think that should be discounted. But Frank Kaminsky also said that the new Charlotte Hornets head coach, James Borrego, told Kaminsky that he's going to be playing more at center, which makes sense, because when you look at the rest of that roster, the fact that they've got Kemba Walker still playing at point guard, and they should not trade him with that $12 million contract. Keep him, sign him to an extension, whatever you got to do, unless you're getting something back legit, or unless you look at Malik Monk. You know, Malik Monk's a shooting guard, and they've pretty much been saying that about Malik Monk too. So they're going to play Malik Monk more at shooting guard. They've talked about, Nick Batum's came out and said this offseason that, oh no, I was just playing at shooting guard, I'm actually naturally a small forward. And we know that back when Batum was on the Blazers, he was playing minutes at power forward. So you've got a lot of versatility on this team that is poised to be shifted around the rotation. Tony Parker's there to play backup minutes behind Kemba Walker. So that puts more shooting guard minutes for Malik Monk as well. Like, there's not going to be any point guard minutes for Malik Monk if the team's healthy. So that means those are all going to have to come at shooting guard, and we definitely want to see Malik Monk get more run this year. Are they going to start? So, I mean, it kind of sounds like they're planning on starting Malik Monk at shooting guard. They don't, because they don't have anybody else
Jeremy
there, right?
There's Jeremy Lamb there.
Oh, you're.
Well, I think they'll start Monk. I think Monk will start.
Oh, but Lamb. I mean, I'm like one of the. I ride or die for Jeremy Lamb. So, man, that's interesting. And that's not, we haven't even mentioned the fact that Miles Bridges was drafted, and you know, he's got a lot of interesting skill there in regards to what he could offer and how he could develop over the years. Marvin Williams maybe gets marginalized, but at the same time, they just, you know, they've got a lot of weird depth there. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist might not play. Yeah, it's interesting, especially, you know, with just some of the way that the guys are shifting in regards to Batum supposedly stepping up to the small forward spot for next season as a starter there, and then Kaminsky taking some of those center minutes. So it's going to be real interesting to see if Borrego ends up running a just super deep rotation, or if he just kind of like looks at Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and goes, dude, you don't know how to shoot. So figure that out.
Either him or Marvin Williams is going to be in real trouble, I think, in terms of the minutes they played last season. It's just not going to be there, that same level of playing time that they got last year. I just can't see how it can be the case if we're going to see Batum, you know, play up to his actual position, and we're going to see more from Monk, and we're going to see more Jeremy Lamb. It's going to force these guys, you know, to move up a position, and they're just not going to, or Kidd-Gilchrist and Williams just aren't going to be able to play as much as what they had in previous seasons. So there is a lot of interest there with that Charlotte rotation. Another team whose rotation is very much up in the air, Kyle, is the Lakers rotation. They don't really have a center on this team, or a quality one anyway. They've got JaVale McGee, there's Flamin Mo Wagner. There's Ivica Zubac. Like, oh, what's happening?
What song is that?
It's Flamin' Mo's from the Simpsons episode when Mo changes his bar into Flamin' Mo's, and then they play a Cheers-based parody.
How in the hell did you? That is awesome.
Have you all not? Right. Have you not seen the Flamin' Mo's episode?
Not yet. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Yep. Yep. No, I just the fact that like you had it in the memory banks and were like, oh, that makes sense. I'm gonna connect those dots. Well done,
sir. Oh yeah, my memory's full of lots of irrelevant bullshit and past instances from Simpsons episodes. So much so that I bring them up, and my son, who's 10, goes to me, like, I was talking about something about the Simpsons. He goes, Dad, I think I should start watching the Simpsons now. Is it good? Oh, mate, it's the best show ever. Go back and watch it. Series 2 through 10. This is like peak television. Series 1's all right, but you got to get into these other ones. Because yeah, I think I'm gonna start watching it. Bang, let's go. Let's go Simpsons Marathon.
Awesome.
Yep.
That's awesome. So, anyway. Okay. Well, what are your thoughts on Mo Wagner? Because I know that you weren't as high on him coming into Summer League, coming into the draft. But he is interesting, and you know, he's an energy guy, so it's easy to root for him at times. I think the game that he played at Michigan was it's hard to look at that and say, okay, it's going to easily translate to the NBA just because they would put him into the post a lot on Michigan. Yes, he would hit the occasional three-pointer, but he's not going to be able to push guys around in the NBA. And plus, you don't play in the post in the NBA, despite what Magic Johnson thinks is going to happen with LeBron. was that?
Yeah, Magic stuff yesterday was pretty weird. He was we've built this team based on the playoffs. So why are you signing Rondo and Lance Stevenson? It didn't.
Anyways.
Yeah.
What do you think about Mo Wagner?
Mo Wagner's defensive numbers in Summer League were well, well above what he did at Michigan. So we're talking a 4 or 5 game sample, not even that, probably 4 game sample in Summer League versus what he did in his time as Michigan. I'd probably more lean towards the Michigan numbers as a guy who does struggle protecting the rim and generating steals as opposed to what he did in a few games in Vegas. But you can't ignore that he actually did that and got those steals and got blocks in high volume. And that's part of the reason why I was quite down on his overall, you know, fantasy potential, because he's a guy that could shoot and can score. I didn't think he'd ever get that sort of similar usage level in the NBA. But if you can't supplement it with any sort of defensive numbers, you're really going to struggle. And he showed that in Vegas. And it made me reassess and go, well, maybe there can be some improvement there. Again, it's extremely small sample size as opposed to the other sample size we've got of him playing at Michigan for 2 years. That's more of a basis of, hey, maybe he can't do this on a regular basis. But it did give me a level of intrigue there. I think they probably will start JaVale and play him a 15, 16 minute role, and Wagner will come in and play. Maybe he plays 18 or 20 minutes. I think I could see Wagner ahead of Zubac, especially given this team does lack some shooters at certain positions. Brandon Ingram's not a good shooter. Lonzo Ball's not a good shooter. Stevenson, Rondo, they're not great shooters. So if you're running lineups and get Wagner out there who is able to shoot, I could see that being an option for them. And he was one of those guys who impressed me at Summer League more than what I was impressed heading into Summer League after the NBA draft.
Just to actually lay out the numbers a little bit, I mean, what I'm seeing on NBA.com is in 21 minutes through 3 games at Summer League, Wagner had 2.7 steals per game.
Yep.
That's bananas. But completely ludicrous. And you're going to blame a lot of that on probably, whatever. He's active and he cares and he tries hard out there. And when you look at the fact that he is kind of, you know, yes, he's a little bit undersized, but that's not to say that he's gets pushed around necessarily, or at least he's going to try and fight. So knowing that Zubats is kind of, I don't know, did you watch much of him in the G League last year, or did you see much from him in the G League last year? Like, has Zubats just flamed out?
Yeah, he didn't take the step forward that we were potentially hoping that he would. And that's I guess the concern there. I liked what he showed at the end of his rookie season, but he definitely didn't take that step forward that we were hoping last year. I still think he's got some potential. he wasn't able to extend his offensive game as much as he probably could have been able to do. He still can protect the rim and block shots, and he's just behind JaVale in that sort of an area for this Lakers team. But I'm a little bit less interested in Zubats than what I was in the past.
If this Lakers team stays the way it is right now, there's the potential for JaVale to play a crap ton of minutes. And if that happens, I mean, lots of blocks, if nothing else.
He could give you 2.5 blocks a game and 8 rebounds and very little else. But he could be like a 65% field goal guy on 7 points, 8 rebounds, 2.5 blocks. And bloody hell, that's valuable. That has fantasy value. So don't be completely out on JaVale. It all depends on how they're going to run things. If they are going to run a lot of, maybe they run Ingram, Kuzma, LeBron, 3-4-5 combinations. I could see them doing that at times, as much as LeBron, I think, would not be all that happy about playing big center minutes. Maybe they play Kuzma at center. Who knows what they're going to do? There are some questions there, but if JaVale is forced into a 24-minute role, then there is value there, because he's going to block shots and he's going to have a high field goal percentage. And that combination together, we talked about it, yesterday's show with Jakob Poeltl, getting two blocks and being a 65% field goal guy has value. It can have top 100 type value, even if there are deficiencies in other areas.
If you, if you're listening to this podcast in the middle of the summer, around Summer League, you're obviously invested in fantasy and the idea of doing the research to come out ahead in your league. So if you aren't already, obviously I think it's a great idea to listen to the other Locked On podcasts with all the different teams and such, because you go on and you listen to the Locked On Lakers podcast, and Anthony Irwin's, he was in love with the idea of LeBron getting signed by the Lakers, obviously, but then he's kind of, you can feel the fear in him when he talks about the fit of certain players on this team and whether or not the process has been right in trying to build this team around LeBron. And you almost hear him trying to do the whole idea of, like, reality is a mirror of your perception, and he's trying to will into creation the idea that LeBron will be playing a lot of center this year, just because if you do look at what is the Lakers' best lineup, it's something around Lonzo and maybe KCP, but maybe Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma. And then you're talking, okay, that means we got to have LeBron at center. So you're right. We might see LeBron at center a lot, just because maybe Luke Walton looks at stuff and says, sorry, LeBron, but that's our best option. And if you want things to be different, go talk to the front office. Go tell your boy Magic that he screwed up.
Yeah, no doubt that Lonzo, Hart/KCP, Ingram, Kuzma, LeBron is their best five guys in terms of lineup. But is it going to fit? There's a lot of question marks in that. I assume, Kyle, you're on board with me that Lonzo is a guaranteed, or should be, the unquestioned starter over Rajon Rondo. He is having knee surgery. Lonzo, he'll be fine for training camp, and that puts a little bit of a concern in terms of his value. But he is going to be the starting point guard almost definitely, or he should be anyway, in my opinion.
If Lonzo doesn't start at point guard, he should be starting at shooting guard. Because he's 6'6". He has the ability. Yeah, he's big. He's bigger than KCP. So Rondo was such a dumb signing. I don't know how to explain that. And if for whatever reason, there is a little bit of the fear of the unknown, the abyss that surrounds the Lakers right now, where you're saying, okay, what if Lonzo isn't necessarily at 100% coming into training camp, and they decide that, oh man, I don't know, man, Connect Four. I'm worried that Rondo is going to have a bigger role than what he should have on this team, which is, like, if it's playing more than 18 to 20 minutes, what the hell are they doing in a lot of respects?
Yeah, there's a potential for ugliness with how the Lakers are going to run some of their rotations, and they're going to be clearly one of the most intriguing teams to watch all season. I referenced earlier that the Milwaukee Bucks are your hometown team, Kyle, but your team that has a piece of your heart. I'm not sure if you're fully off the bandwagon of the Detroit Pistons at this point. You've got some thoughts on some of their rotational stuff. I really enjoyed what the Shark Bruce Brown was able to do in Summer League. Henry Allinson took every single shot available. So what did you make of some of the Pistons things that we've seen? And I know you've been digging into some Andre Drummond Instagram posts.
Oh, yeah. Well, Andre Drummond, so one of the best resources for figuring out what the Pistons are going to do in a coming year is reading their NBA.com writers' articles every summer.
Who is their NBA.com writer?
Keith Langlois. Keith.
Okay, yep.
He had such good information coming into last year, or from in the middle of the summer. He like pretty much laid out how the rotation was going to be, the fact that Boban wasn't going to really be an every game starter, all this kind of, or every game rotation player, all that kind of stuff, and just what the plans were going into the season. So it's good to keep up to date with him. And one of the things he's mentioned already this summer is that Dwayne Casey has told Drummond that he's going to probably take the occasional three-pointer. So in order to spread the floor out a little bit, they're going to let Drummond drift. And if you were if you looked on some of his Instagram stories or that he puts out, Drummond's out there taking some deep twos, if nothing else, to extend his range. And Drummond also said that he's been taking three-point shots for years in practice, and now he's going to be able to finally do that a little bit. That's not to say that he's going to be taking several shots a game, but we saw last year with Valanciunas, he finally extended his range and started shooting threes. And I think he hit like, what, 0.8 a game, or at least took 0.8 a game. So there's it's not going to impact his fantasy statistics greatly. It might obviously drop the field goal percentage a little bit, but you're still going to see, and I guess maybe that drops his offensive rebounds a little bit as well. But
yeah, we saw that with Nick Vucevic last season. His rebounding rate dropped as he started taking more threes.
But in general, you're still going to see Drummond be one of the top rebounders in the league. And I don't, like, you can't be so thick-headed to think, well, we're going to have Drummond shooting so much from the outside that he's going to, you know, we're not going to have him in position to do the thing that he's absolutely best at. And that is, like, at a historic level. So, in regards to Summer League with the Pistons, Bruce Brown, why is he called the Shark?
This is something I was thinking as I was walking down the footpath last night, late at night. I was thinking, yeah, preparing for this podcast. We were, I'm going to be talking to Kyle. We're going to be talking, yeah, Pistons. I know he wants to talk Pistons, guys. I want to talk about Bruce Brown. I thought, what's a good nickname, Bruce Brown? Where's it going here? Where's a Brown in here? It's nothing Brucey. Yeah, maybe. But then I thought about the Shark from Finding Nemo and his name. Is Bruce. So there you go. So that's where I just came up with that last night as I was walking down the street in the freezing cold weather to go to the supermarket. I said, Bruce Brown is hereby going to be known as the Shark. So there you go.
Your beautiful non sequitur mind. I love it.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly how it goes.
That's, I was walking down the footpath last night thinking about Bruce Brown. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This is like, it's like a love story where you're, you know, but that's awesome. No, Bruce Brown is super interesting. He's got good size out there on the wing, and he can do a little bit of everything, which is exactly what you want out of a modern NBA player. It sucks that Luke Kennard was not healthy enough to play at Summer League. The fact that he, I think, twisted his ankle right before it started during one of their practices. So because one of the key things that was going to happen with Luke Kennard is he was going to play point guard at Summer League. And that's something that I don't know. I heard somebody say something on one of the podcasts I was listening to, and they made a comment about Luke Kennard, and they said, well, you know, you wouldn't really want him playing point guard. And I'm like, what the hell? Who did you watch? This guy can pass the ball like a straight up gangster. So, I've got no doubt that in the modern NBA where you don't have, you know, ground and pound point guards like Stockton, Steve Nash. You don't have that. You know, Chris Paul's out there pounding the ball because he's Chris Paul. You want him setting guys up because he's so great at it. But for the most part, ball handling duties are shared. You know, you've got a guy like James Harden who gets most of the assists on the team, and then you've got a guy like Devin Booker who's the quote unquote probably lead ball handler on the team, but he's only getting 5.5-6 assists because you've got other guys handling the ball too. So those are duties that get shared in the modern NBA in many respects. And that's why you don't have guys dropping 12 dimes a game anymore. Anyways, Luke Kennard hopefully will get slotted into under Dwayne Casey with the new coach there and with the Pistons. Hopefully he'll get slotted into a lot of those backup point guard minutes, which means less minutes for Ish Smith, which is going to be good for everybody across the world. And hopefully that means Jose Calderon's just not in the rotation. And that's not to say that I dislike Jose Calderon, but it's like when you see Seth Curry getting signed for what he got signed for with the Trailblazers, when you see, I don't know, there's one or two other point guard, backup point guard situations where I was just like, you know what? I was okay with the Calderon signing at first because he's not a bad guy to have on the roster necessarily to come in and knock down a shot. But what the hell, man? You're giving him, you know, $2+ million, and there's these other cats out there who actually have room to grow and who you could actually maybe end up turning into a starting point guard someday. And I don't know. I just, that was a signing that kind of the longer I saw him there on the roster, the less I liked it.
At least Langston Galloway is still in the roster.
Oh man. I don't hate the Langster, but he's got to be used in the right way again. And, hopefully Dwayne Casey figures things out better than what Stan Van Gundy did, because the Pistons' biggest problem last year was Stan Van Gundy as coach. He had certain preconceived notions about what his players were and didn't necessarily see some of the positives in what his players are. Something that Dwayne Casey has talked about, or two things. We'll start with Henry Ellenson since it's Summer League related, and then I'll move on to Stanley Johnson. But yeah, baby. Henry Ellenson was told that he's going to have an opportunity for next year, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how that comes to fruition unless he gets in the gym this summer and he makes jumps in regards to how he attacks the game, because his shot takes far too long to load on the perimeter. And while he does make some interesting plays off the dribble in regards to his passing as a 6'10 big man, there's just not enough polish to his game right now, especially considering like the one thing that he should be able to do, the one thing he should have developed over his, what, 2 or 3 years in the NBA already, is, now granted, he's still like the youngest guy on the Pistons roster. So that's the one thing he has going for him, is the fact that he's still young as all get out. But the fact that Henry Ellenson still, how long it takes for him to load up his jump shot after he receives the ball on the, and in a spot up situation, it just blows my mind, because you're going to get blocked, or it's just, there's too much motion in the whole production of getting that 3-point shot off. So I just don't have a lot of faith in it right now. And I've been one of the biggest Henry Ellenson apologists for years, and I'm losing faith a lot.
Yeah, he does have an opportunity though this year with Anthony Tolliver gone. I'm just not so certain he's going to step into it. There is still a long way to go, but with Hank.
John Luehr's still there.
No, the tackle box. I forgot about him. Yeah,
you know. So I mean, like all of this notion that there's no impediment to him getting those backup minutes. Plus, Dwayne Casey's probably gonna give Blake Griffin 33 to 36 minutes a night as well.
Yep.
At power forward. So I just don't know, man. I don't know if it's there. And yeah, anyways. So that's tough. The one thing in regard to Stanley Johnson that is positive is that Dwayne Casey has, since he interviewed, or when he interviewed with the team, he apparently made a point to say that there's something there with Stanley Johnson that needs to come out in regards to, you know, a deeper level of talent that just hasn't been unleashed or hasn't been polished and refined yet. Now, one of the things that they talked about in regard to the offense for the Pistons this year is that it's going to be a lot of, and they talked about this with Henry Ellenson too, is that they want people to get the rebound and go. So you're not, you know, you're going to be sharing the ball handling duties. If nothing else, you'll get the ball, you'll run it up the court, and then if there's nothing there, if you haven't gotten the defense on its heels and you can't attack the basket, you'll give it up to Reggie Jackson or whoever. But at least you don't have Reggie bringing the ball up, sucking air every possession and doing it slow and everybody waiting for him to come up and then just chuck a shot while they just stand and watch. So, yeah, there's a little bit of hope that there's advanced opportunity for more possessions for Stanley Johnson, because one of the things that's limited his potential is the fact that he's just been such a low usage player as well. So those are all my thoughts on the Pistons. They are not necessarily positive or optimistic. And I really wish that Carmelo would get traded to them for Blake Griffin's bloated ass contract. But that's just not going to happen.
Let's talk about our last thing from this very, very long podcast. We had a lot to talk about, Kyle, and that is, of course, Fartin Will Barton, who is the new projected starting forward for the Denver Nuggets. I am not a Barton fan. I think his contract was okay. It was a little bit of an overpay. They had to shed a lot of depth so they could save their multi-billionaire owner a couple of million dollars, which is not something I'm a fan of. I know that the GM did a great job to get out of that luxury tax, which was a legitimate concern, but it just shits me that they had to lose three players who were part of their depth in order to save money for the ownership. But Barton, as the starting small forward, Kyle, most of his value, I believe, last year came from the fact that he was the backup point guard and he was having to run things and have the ball in his hands a whole lot. This season, when you play him alongside Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, Paul Millsap, and Nikola Jokic, he is the fifth best player quite clearly out of that five, that group of five guys. And when he played alongside those guys last season, he saw like a 6 or 7% usage rate drop. He saw his assist rate almost cut in half, his rebound rate. And I think that expecting him, even though he is the starter now, to replicate what he did last season, I don't think he's going to be able to do that just because of the different role and not having the ball in his hands. And even when he plays with that backup unit, Isaiah Thomas is going to be there as well. So I just don't think that this elevation or promotion of Barton to the starting small forward job is good for his fantasy value.
I completely agree. Everything you said just makes sense. The difference between playing with Isaiah Thomas and Devin Harris on that second unit and doing so with a bunch of bit pieces versus being in the starting lineup and playing with Jokic and Jamal Murray and Paul Millsap, who they were overly feeding the ball to in the early parts of last season. Who knows what Dr. Malone is going to do to start the season? You know, he's a madman. So, man, I don't see things playing out well for Will Barton. And you know what? Wilson Chandler had wanted out of the Nuggets for a long time for whatever reasons. He's always been kind of had a level of consternation about being on that team, or at least it seemed that way for the last couple of years. So kudos to the Sixers for being able to grab another guy who's perfect for this, for today's NBA, who's got the size to at least try to guard a Kevin Durant in today's NBA out on the wing when they match up with the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals.
He gives an interesting option there for the Sixers with Wilson Chandler. But yeah, I'm not big on Barton.
Yeah, I guess that would be the finals. Sorry.
I knew what you meant. All good. Yeah, okay, it fits perfectly, especially with Nemanja Bjelica reneging on that contract, saying he's going back to Europe, and now apparently in discussions with the Kings, because why wouldn't you want to go to Sacramento? Although he would have a pretty large role in Sacramento, given that that Justin Jackson could be their starting three, which would not be great. We don't need to get too much into that. Kyle, I've kept you way too long today. Make sure, everyone, you are following Kyle on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA. He's got lots of thoughts on all of this stuff that's gone down in the NBA. Check out yesterday's podcast where we talked about Kawhi Leonard. Today, where we went through a whole bunch of free agency stuff, rotational thoughts, and some summer league action. Kyle, thanks for coming on again and chatting to me with all this information just spewing right off the top of your dome.
Yeah, thanks for. I'm sorry that I rambled so long at certain points, and thank you for allowing me the pleasure of spending time with you, Josh. Before we sign off, can you hook me up one more time with that drop?
Which one, the Kyle one or the Mo Bamba one?
Oh, no. My favorite. I am flattered by the Kyle drop from South Park, but you know which one I love right now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There you go.
Hey, thank you, sir.
No problem. Guys, go and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up, leave a comment, leave a 5-star rating. You know all those ways that I do enjoy you guys supporting the show. There's going to be some information about some of the Red Rock Challenge Leagues, the Tier 2 of the Head-to-Head Leagues going out in the next few days, so keep an eye on your emails for that. Kyle, thank you once again.
Thank you, Josh.
Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jack Cooley.